All right, all bets are in. One Up Radio Network is on the air, and this is the One Up Your Show for June 9th, 2006. I'm your host, Garnet Lee. As you can tell, I got a little cold thing working, but I'm fighting through it. Got my English tea.
Oh, very good.
It's very awesome. All right, so today's show, we're going to do the What You've Been Playing segment up front, of course. And like I was saying, all bets are in. We do have a winner for the second week of the contest sitting right here on the table. And it wasn't the most insulting one, but I really liked the most insulting one. But we'll get to that in a minute. In the middle section, we're going to talk about open-ended gameplay versus scripted gaming. That's been up a lot, especially considering how hot GTA was in our forums when we were talking about it. And with the blowing up of MMOs, it seems like something we need to get into. And then at the end, of course, we'll hit the news section with Mr. Luke Smith.
Good morning.
Doodling while you're
that's what news guys do. A little bit.
Doodle?
Yeah.
You know, they doodle on your notepad. So I guess we'll go around the table, get this thing started. What's going on, fellas?
Shane, how are you this morning?
I'm doing great, Luke.
Good. It's good to see you.
It's good to see you, too.
Oh, it's very special. Would you like to share a coffee?
Last week, they agreed with each other twice, and it's something completely changed dynamic.
Can you agree about what you've been playing this week?
I don't think so. I actually, because everything I play, Shane's probably played months before, but I played through New Super Mario Brothers. I was coming back from my sister's wedding.
That's so last month.
I know. You played through it?
Yeah,
whole thing?
Like 1-5, so like the top levels to 8 and just was done.
It's a fun game.
It's fun. It's good. Then
that wasn't such a ringing endorsement.
Yeah,
you loved it.
Well, it has a great personality.
Like when I'm playing, and the first three levels are like, hey, regular world, desert land, water world. I was like, I played this game in 1991. It was Super Mario Brothers 3, and this game doesn't have a Tanuki suit, so I don't care.
But it, you know, it doesn't pull any punches, and it's solid, and it's enjoyable.
It's
stupid as it is to say it is what it is, and it's good at what it's doing. And
I don't like the save system.
It's a huge hit.
Huge, yeah.
Huge hit.
I don't like the save system, and I don't like the music. But otherwise, I like it.
Couldn't save in Super Mario Brothers 3. Couldn't save ever.
You know, producer Skip has left some of his questionable toys
the
around.
Dremel.
What the hell is this thing?
In order to see what they're talking about,
I have
to check out the video.
We did forget to mention that.
That was an awesome segue and a save. So, like, as Jason is here, Jason, I wish we could turn the camera around for you, but Jason from Game Videos is here filming us, and that will be up late in the evening today with the on-game videos. So just sit there and click refresh and
mash refresh. Yeah, watch the Marty O'Donnell Halo 3 exclusive interview that we put up today, too. Another thing I was playing is NFL Head Coach, which Brian Intihar and I are doing something on for EGM. And yeah. I really, really, like, I talked about it a while ago. Like, I really wanted to like NFL Head Coach because I'm a huge stat whore and I love statistics, but...
Is it like the Sports Interactive, like, Football Manager stuff that's big in the UK? It's all like...
Yeah,
it's like playing a spreadsheet.
It is playing Excel.
Tell me what you told me about the first 8 hours you played.
The first 8 hours? I don't remember what I told you. Other than it was just fucking reading over and over. I was like I finished my first orientation thing, which is a timeless event. Like, there's no time frame that you can work in. And the first thing you do is interview, like, you interview all your coaches. Like... And it's not like I'm the head coach. It's not like I'm interviewing my offensive and defensive coordinators. I have a quarterback's coach, a running back's coach, a wide receiver. Like,
how much money do you get paid to play this game?
Into the NFL, and they're actually like
remember, we fired him. He doesn't get paid
because,
at all,
like,
anymore.
NFL head coaches get paid a lot of money.
It's like a job. And the text on my television, it could be the TV that I have, but the TV I have looks okay, but the text is really hard to read, and I have to sit really close, and I have like a cathode tan now.
Are you working on like a, you know, like a PowerPoint presentation you have to give the owner later?
I'm almost done with it.
What system's it on?
I'm playing it on Xbox.
It's PS2 and Xbox.
Yeah, I can...
Ooh.
It's rough. Like, I really wanted to like it, too.
So does it play out the games in, like, graphically at all?
Eventually. Or? I'm not to that part yet. What? I'm still
You've been
in...
playing for 8 hours
I'm
and
still
you've not
in,
played a game
I'm
yet?
Still in, like,
you don't,
training
you don't
camp,
control the
scouting
game. You don't
camps.
Right, I know. But, I mean, if it's like these Football Manager games, what you would do is you'd affect all the stats in the stadium or whatever, and then it would do a sort of compressed...
It would simulate a game,
but it would play them on a 3D pitch, and you could watch highlights or whatever.
So I've actually seen the game demoed, and yes, the games play out in 3D, and it's almost like watching the TV cam of Madden. It's really nicely presented and everything. Here's the problem that I had when they were demoing it that kind of pissed me off, that I want to know whether or not they changed. While you're playing this head coach role, you would think you'd be calling the plays, right? But you don't really have freedom to call the plays because it's like this big ass soap opera. You have to keep your coordinators happy. So they suggest plays, and if you don't run enough of the plays they suggest, then they get pissed and go, you know what, screw you, I'm going to go work someplace else.
Which and then you have to hire someone.
And then you have to hire. Then you have to go through this whole crap all over again.
An interview. Like, a guy came to my office the other day and started talking to me about it, and I literally just clicked, like, we're doing this later. Because I wasn't in the mood to do it.
I mean, I would be wanting to call the plays.
So it's a game that's, like, real life.
Yeah, and that sucks.
It's like HR the game.
Yeah.
I mean, somehow I don't see, like, Shanahan standing on the sidelines when someone calls in a play that he doesn't like and him overruling him and the guy going, you know what? That sucks. I'm going to quit. Yeah, I don't think so. Yeah.
What are you playing, Shane?
Well, for work, I've been playing Valkyrie Profile for PSP. And
nice.
Yeah, I played the old game on PS1. It's kind of fun to play it again. It's really hard. It has new cinema. Yeah, it's a good game, you know. But it's a PS1 port, so it's hard to get that excited about it. It's something I've already played. But it's a game I'm playing on my PSP, and that's unique.
That's more than a lot of people can say about what they're doing with their
PSPs.
You've
been playing a lot of PSP stuff lately.
For work.
And you call it best tries RPG ever?
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, that's kind of the reputation, right?
Yeah, Tri-Ace, they're a really good B-level developer. I mean, like, the Star Ocean games, they're pretty good, you know? They're pretty good. I like Tri-Ace. I've also been playing this game.
Ringing in dark.
I know. He's
one of your
This is
jokes.
As good as, like, the last one you did.
There's this other great game called Rough Trigger. Have you heard of this?
No, I haven't.
I think I've done
What the heck's that?
Is that a move?
It's pretty amazing.
Baby, I call this one the Rough Trigger.
She didn't like it very much, huh?
No. So at least it was a sheep.
Did you say a sheep?
At least it was a sheep?
I think it was a she.
And the show is over.
It was a she-sheep. Anyway, the Rough Trigger is a Ratchet & Clank clone, like, down to, like, every level. If you see this game, you would think, is that Ratchet & Clank? No, it's a Ratchet & Clank clone.
System.
PS2, you play a thing that looks kind of like
PS2 really needs another one.
Yeah, you
those.
Look kind of like Ratchet. You have a little sidekick who looks kind of Clank, and you get different weapons, and it's basically Ratchet and Clank.
Is it good?
Who's it by?
It's published by Natsume.
Like, as in, wow. Not so much interested.
Natsume, not so much what?
Yeah.
No, I didn't say that. But for fun, I've been playing Street Fighter Alpha Anthology, which is coming out in like 2 weeks, and it's fantastic. Street Fighter Alpha 2 is like my favorite Street Fighter.
You like it more than Third Strike?
I like it more than Third Strike. I love Third Strike. But
I really like Third Strike.
I think the balance between simplicity and complexity and, like, it's just a really awesome game. We've been playing a ton of it.
I see that on, like, so many screens walking through the office. It's like you walk through the office and you're like, oh, that person's playing it.
Well, you know, Street Fighter, it's good, and it's always been good, and it'll always be good, and there's just, like, pure gameplay and control. Like, seriously, other people still can't make fighting games with the control and depth of Street Fighter.
Do you think we're ever going to see, like, a 3D Street Fighter?
You know, the last fighting game they made was so horrible, Capcom Fighting Jam. It was, like, it was so bad. It was terrible. So if that's the kind of game they make now, I'd rather, like, live with my memories. But if they could make another good fighting game, I'd be happy, but I'm not holding my breath.
We got to watch out. Hey, Skip, by the way, can we put in, like, a board over here that's like the strike count, but instead of the strike count, it's like that's gameplay count, you know, so we can just kind of tick that shit off as it goes by?
John?
I've been playing little bits of a lot of things. So I finished up Liberty City Stories.
Which you gave a 9.
I did.
Dude.
Because it was only $20. It was a value-driven thing.
I got a value counterpoint coming up.
But it is. It is a new GTA.
It's a new GTA that 11 million people that had, you know, didn't play the PSP one that are potentially interested in GTA didn't play, and it's only $20.
It's cool.
And GTA Universe still works.
Oh, absolutely.
But I mean, as a PS2 game right now, not only is it, you know, the only really good thing that's out right now, it's really good value.
And you see Fry's is like a California and like Southwest chain had it for like $12.99.
Right.
You can at that point, it's like an impulse buy.
$14 or Circuit City were doing it for $14.99.
Like, I can go have a steak or I can buy
and it's
the
a
new
full
GTA.
It's a full-on GTA. They didn't really, it's, you know, Vice City quality visuals. It's got all the radio stuff. And just because it doesn't have the multiplayer stuff in it, it's not that big of a deal because it's only $20.
So if I play GTA 1, uh-huh. How much difference is there between Liberty City Stories and GTA 1?
GTA 1?
GTA 1.
GTA 3, the first
you
one.
You trolling assheads. He means the GTA. God, even I knew what he was talking about.
If I played Grand Theft Auto 3, the original.
Don't encourage his idiocy.
What's the difference?
That's how.
Yeah,
we
how much difference is there? Isn't Liberty City basically a retelling of the same stuff?
No.
Okay, I thought Liberty City Stories
it's a completely new
you're
story that
character.
Acknowledges the timeline. You're a different character. Yeah. It's got 34, 33 mini-games on it. There's a main quest line that's 40 hours at least. It took me 45 hours to beat the PSP one.
Jesus.
And I got it's a
You played that more than Oblivion.
Game. Yeah. It's a big, big game, and what they've done is it's a lot of people play GTA, and they start the cutscenes and they skip them, and I think for this, because it was originally on the PSP, they just didn't do long cutscenes. So you get these a little bit of flavor of the interaction between two people, then it goes straight in. It tells you what you need to do, and the objectives aren't convoluted like they were in San Andreas.
Nice.
So instead of in San Andreas, you'd have these sort of branching quests, where an individual quest maybe had three or four, it'd be like, go here, do this, find this, get in this plane, parachute on here, then storm the building, kill this guy, grab this thing, and get out. And it'd take you 2 hours. Whereas in Liberty City, it would...
That was awesome, by the way.
But in Liberty City, it's literally, go here, steal a car, take the car to here, and kill this guy, and you're done. And all the missions are like that. So it's also... You can dip into it really nicely. So...
This energy is, like, contagious. I actually almost, like, want to go buy the thing.
I know people gave me some shit for giving it a 9, but for $20 on the PS2 right now, I don't think there's a better new game on PS2 right now that you could go into store.
Yeah, it's kind of exactly what PS2 needs.
Yeah.
Actually.
It should be celebrated, not just trolled, which is what seems to be happening on all the boards right now.
GTA is still relevant. Who knew?
So other stuff I've been playing. I played something that got ignored that... I was just interested in because I'm English and I remember the comic book, is Rogue Trooper through Eidos, which I think everyone in the US wrote off because it was an Eidos repedal of an SCI game. You talked about this on the EGM podcast.
Did you see the EGM? We gave it like 8s and 7s. We're all like, what
the fuck?
It's
very, very good. Rogue Trooper's Rebellion, who were actually the developer that did the original Alien vs. Predator on the Jaguar, have been continuing to develop and remained independent. And in the UK, one of the ways they remained independent was they acquired the publisher of 2000 AD, which is the comic book that does Judge Dredd most famously. And Rogue Trooper is this alien futuristic soldier, and he has a sentient hat or something.
His fallen comrades were turned into his backpack, his hat, and his gun.
And his gun.
And they're like wisecracking,
so,
right?
Yeah, so he has an...
what? This is like a double take, yeah.
That's like that Jack Black show that didn't get made.
Right. So there's this sort of like, you know, relationship with your weapons and everything. And it plays a bit like a sort of slightly dumbed down Grow.
Wow.
But it's really well done, and it's on it's a new Xbox game. I played the Xbox version. It's on PS2 as well. The Xbox version looks really nice.
Did you happen to drop it in your 360?
I've not tried, but I wonder if it has PC. I would imagine it will, because I think that's a requirement now, right?
I'm just curious.
Consumers are no longer interested in backwards compatibility.
Apparently.
Oh, right. That's right. It doesn't matter.
Just to hog the mic for a little bit longer, the other thing that I started playing Oblivion again.
Oh, you said you were done. You hear that? You hear that? That's the sound of applause from everyone who reads the message boards. They're like, he's back! Yes, horror stories!
Yeah.
Oh, God, yes, we've been waiting for it!
You know what it was? It was a fucking patch.
Oh, it was the patch.
Every time I think I'm out, they pull me back in.
You want to buy that dagger?
You know, I thought it was going to be like some girl that told you she forgot to put on a patch.
I don't know.
Like over her eye? Darhar.
No, like the other kind of patch.
So I downloaded the live update and downloaded the patch for Oblivion just to see what it did, and it kind of sucked me back in again.
It didn't bork your game? We'll talk about that later.
It did.
All right, so are you playing it any differently this time?
Sorry?
Are you playing it any differently this time?
I did spend an hour... because I'd completely got out of the rhythm of it. So you go into this world, and my quest list, unfinished quest list, is huge. And if you've not played for a while and you're not in that sort of vibe, you do wander around just going, what the hell am I going to do? Because nothing seems interesting enough, or you're in the middle of some quests, and you kind of lost the energy to do it. And you sort of see, oh, I'm halfway through this one. I'm like, I can't really be bothered. I don't really remember. And
I feel like that a lot just in life.
So, yeah, in that way, Oblivion does reflect. Right. But we'll get to the balking of Oblivion later on. But there you go. Considering that I've been not had much time to game, I've actually played a lot of games this week.
That was the longest What You've Been Playing segment ever.
I know, and I haven't even hit mine.
Yeah.
I know. And so I'm gonna cut mine down to one game, because the one game that I played that's relevant to your $20 is my $20 was a date with Alex on the episode 1 Half-Life 2 expansion.
Cool.
And you know what? Here's the thing. And then so the review's up, and I gave it an 8, which a couple people around the office have been giving me massive hell for not giving
it. Hi, Ryan O'Donnell.
Yeah. Hey, what's up, Ryan?
It's too low. An 8 is too low.
Yeah, an 8 is too low. First of all, an 8's a great score. Second of all, it's a fun expansion, but something we talked about episodic gaming is how much are we going to leeway? Are we going to give? You know, this is like the beginning of episodic gaming. We have to determine what's, you know, what we expect from episodic gaming. This is like 3.5 hours at most.
$20
for $20.
It's 3.5 hours. I heard it was 5 or 6.
It's definitely longer than that because
Skip's saying 5 or 6.
Skip's been playing it all week at his desk.
But it is recycled. It's recycled environments.
Okay, and that was the second part of my real complaint with this. Is you come into this thing expecting to do something new, and they immediately don't even hesitate to shove you right back into what you were doing at the end of Half-Life 2. So within no time at all, you feel like you're just playing part of Half-Life 2. And there's no multiplayer to it. There's no new enemies to it. So, Half-Life 2 was really great, but I expect a little bit more for my $20, especially if I'm waiting 6 months. I mean, it's going to be another 6 months till I have anything else.
Does it feel like the bare minimum they could have done? Is that kind of what it...
It's difficult to say bare minimum because the upside of this thing is...
Just flame bait you, aren't you? My God.
I wouldn't say bare minimum because what they did put all their attention to is what makes it really awesome and the reason I wouldn't hesitate to recommend it to somebody, which is Alex. And Alex is so... the best digital character I've ever played with in a game, period. She has a real personality that comes through in the game and actually comes through so strong that Valve has some real questions to answer about how they're going to handle Gordon not having a personality because she's so real and so cool now that Gordon being this...
Gordon isn't supposed to have a personality.
I know.
He's supposed to be every nerd's dream.
And they're going to have a real problem with that because Alex is so real now that her not interacting with you makes you just feel like you're just like this wooden... You're the wooden guy in Tekken 3.
You're
so C-3PO. It isn't really an expansion, though, is it? I mean, it's a separate thing. This isn't like Luke last week saying that, if you bought everything for Oblivion, you've spent $80-something and 64 cents. I mean, you cannot play Half-Life and just jump into this $20 five-hour thing.
You could because the beginning does the little, beginning of 24 thing.
Or is it so fan-serving that...
It's very fan-serving.
You need to have played all the way through the first game?
You need to have played it because particularly the first section of what you do, without spoiling anything, the first part of what you're doing would be completely unintelligible if you hadn't played through Half-Life 2. It wouldn't make any sense.
So I should play Half-Life 2 first.
Yeah, you should really play Half-Life 2. And really, if you haven't finished it...
Luke's turning. Man, he's going, oh,
fuck?
God, I don't
know.
You should totally play Half-Life 2. Half-Life 2 is freaking awesome.
As soon as I get the new gaming PC at my desk, I'm going to...
Yeah, Half-Life 2 is...
How long's Half-Life 2?
I don't know.
20?
20 or so, yeah. It took me a long while to get through Half-Life
2. And that's a good first-person shooter to you as opposed to Halo, right?
Troll.
But we have to go to the question.
It has more environments than concrete halls.
What about...
Producer Skip's moving us on. All right, all right.
Skip's more audible than ever this week.
All right, we got to get you that mic, man.
There's one right here.
I got to get you a mic. All right, so contest winners. All right, so we got the contest winners right here. Right there, folks. And let's go through real quick. Here's the winner. All right, we don't need to talk about that one. And we're going to give special mention to Beige. Beige did an awesome...
There was actually a request on this particular thread, Beige, to stop being so good because you're making everybody else look bad.
Yeah.
I'm going to send that dude a message today. I want to talk to that guy.
Luke wants a special helper.
He did call us.
I'm going to talk to you, Beige. I'll send you a message.
Well, Beige did refer to us as the guitar hero of radio.
Which, on its own, I think, if he hadn't won last week. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah.
We haven't posted any real rules for this, but I think we probably can say that if you win one, that's...
Yeah,
you can't win.
Plus, try to spread the love.
The dude's Canadian, and we still can't figure out a way to give him his $100.
I just saw this part. What's up, Frenchy lady? Want to come back to my room? Well, I got broadband.
The thing that I wanted to just from...
I think
from,
that might be a pretend Lukeism.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was kind of a pretend Lukeism.
From Beige's thing, the thing I just wanted to mention was something that I went and read to Garnett, too, because it was actually really... It was really cool to read, and it wasn't the
you
Guitar
read
Hero
it to
thing.
Well,
yeah, it's kind of like a bedtime story.
Aw.
Yes. Nice. It said, one of yours is a special edition director's cut of nostalgia, wit, and abrasive humor, obviously put out by people with something to say. As a gamer, you recognize it instantly, whatever your age or console of choice. It's the voice of the people, plain and simple. It's as real as it gets. And, for someone who does, care a shitload about video games, to have that be, something that people are getting and picking up from it actually means a lot to me. And that's a tremendous compliment. Thank you.
Very flattered by all of it.
Yeah.
All right, so even the insulting one.
Why don't I throw a couple of quick quotes then from some of the other ones out here? We've got AR Black 37 who says, "There you have it, a fucked up group of individuals who come together each week to give us an entertaining hour out of our sadly game-driven, pathetic lives. I'd love to offer up a perfect score, but I was sadly distraught to see in the video version that there was no lingerie models sitting amongst the group." Hey, you know what, dude? Absolutely right. Send us the lingerie models.
I'll see what I can do next week.
We need to definitely get on that. Definitely need to get on that. Alex Anand, "When a podcast makes other gaming podcasts feel like they're being kicked in the nuts only for your ears."
You know, I would like to point something
out. And this part's even
better. I'm thinking,
as the editorial director.
As editorial director. Yes. Anyone that spells my fucking name wrong gets disqualified. So that's everybody.
By the way, it is Davison.
Hey, my name gets butchered worse than yours.
Not mine. Luke Smith, easy mode.
Also, by the way, you've got an offer here.
I saw that.
"Luke makes people bleed, Luke rocks, and Luke can date my sister."
Nice. That's lukeums.oneup.com. Send pics.
There you go.
I'll get you later.
Yeah, you're getting all the
I'll
tang.
Get you later, Sony.
Don Brown, which you're going to, I don't want to know anyway. Don Brown offered up a little poem for us. "There once was a podcast from 1UP. Could listen from sundown till sunup."
Ooh.
"Until editor Luke Smith stormed out like a huge bitch. Then I could do nothing but throw up."
Was that Dan Brown, the author of Da Vinci Code?
Just the insulting.
Most insulting one is fantastic.
Can I read this one?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, but you have to make sure. Yeah, there's a lot.
This is from Neo Job, who's a regular contributor.
Yeah, he posts on my blog.
One up yours. "Are you fucking serious?"
No.
Not really.
Not really.
"Who got paid to come up with that witty name? That witty, silly name? Man, hang on to the talent you guys got there coming up with names like One Up Yours. You know what you guys should do with that name? Get a giant marketing firm, hire the world's greatest pop artist, do some commercials, and then get a giant hammer and hammer that name directly up yours." Excellent. And there's probably more.
He later goes on to refer to me as the P. Diddy of the podcast, which kind of offensive.
Yeah, here we go. "Maybe I'll get the British guy giggling and the gay guy wheezing." Is that you, Luke?
I'm sorry, that's Gary with a silent R.
God.
Quit wheezing.
That's a riot to listen to, by the way. You have no idea how much I enjoy my ears bleeding, and I have the Luke wine to thank for that.
Fuck you, buddy.
You ought to try living with it, dude.
And what the fuck is the deal with Shane? Do you fancy yourself as some kind of media mogul?
Yes.
Are you the Ziff Davis P. Diddy? Why are you infecting every single piece of audio and video escaping the offices out there
over
in California?
Fucking exposed.
And by the way, where the hell's your Pepsi, man? You can't be rocking the Diet Coke.
Because of P. Diddy?
Yeah.
Next week.
Then he says, "I just hope Ziff doesn't produce any video game inspired pornography. I couldn't handle Shane's immense paleness." But at least
he's right about immense.
Oh boy. End show.
All right.
So there was a winner to all this?
Yeah, there was. That guy does not win.
But to be fair, we did ask to be insulted.
He's right about it, man. Can we get that sound bite?
Neo Job nailed that one. So the winner is Tefizzer. Tefizzer did an awesome job.
This was excellent.
This is excellent. He did like a takeoff, even with a byline, of the Washington Post online.
Is this the one that killed us in the beginning? Like, there was one that was like, it was... No.
Okay. He gave us a 4 out of 4. He starts off, "Take one mundane looking room, 4 eccentric game journalists, fast, sharp flying projectiles, and you have yourself the One Up Yours podcast. In the post Y2K period, where the ever perennial internet has taken hold of our everyday lives, the game industry seems to be progressing right on the same tune." So it's cool. He does it very much in the style of like a news report. I mean, and that came across really well. We liked that. And we also liked that in his wrap up, he says, "Overall, I would say that One Up Yours is a well-balanced mix of news, opinion, and insight with a strong connection to the OneUp.com user base." And yeah, you know what? That's what we try to do. So it's cool that he's catching that. It's good that we're making that vibe.
What does he win?
He wins a $100 iTunes gift card.
Sweet.
So we're all like, feeling thoroughly stroked and pompous and arrogant.
I need a Kleenex.
We can all
I still really like
you
Neo
got stroked
Jobs.
A little too much.
I guess that's why I like Neo Jobs.
So we're going to be dicks now because...
Skip's even. You know what? We've done this segment so long. Skip stopped going like that. He gave up on that.
Are we supposed to have a break?
Yeah, we're supposed to have a break.
No, not yet.
So we'll come back in a minute and we'll hit the roundtable on open-ended versus scripted play. And we'll be back in 5.
You're listening to One Up Yours, part of the One Up Radio Network.
1UP Network Radio is being brought to you by And One Streetball, the only authentic streetball game featuring the full roster of And One mixtape tour players. That's guys like Hot Sauce, Helicopter, and The Professor. It's available for PlayStation 2 and Xbox for $39.99 on Tuesday, June 6th at your favorite online and real-world stores. And One Streetball is rated E10 for everyone 10 and up.
Hello, and welcome to the 1UP Radio Network. If you know the name of the podcast you'd like to hear, press 1 now. You have selected Radio PM, starring the editors of the official U.S. PlayStation magazine. To download an episode at radiopm.1up.com, press 1 now. To listen to a promo, press 2 now. In a world ripped apart by war, only one magazine.
All right, so we got to open up the floodgates here on this whole talk about open-ended games versus scripted. And it's kind of building off of, first of all, we were talking about two things we talked about a lot, actually, are Grand Theft Auto and massively multiplayer games. And this is like a big shift that's been going on over the past few years towards these sandbox games or, you know, a wide open emergent gameplay and all that kind of BS the PR people give us. But the bottom line is, what do you want to play? What do you want to play, John or Shane or Luke? Do you want to play games that have stories to them, or do you want to play big wide open worlds?
I like them both.
Yeah, I'm going to say I like big wide open with a reason to do it. There's nothing worse than being thrown into an environment and just being, you need some guidance.
Where they said, go and make your own fun.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, I like the opportunity to sort of get distracted, but there still needs to be a point.
And a lot of the biggest games now, though, like the mass market games, are those incredibly open-ended games like The Sims or Animal Crossing, where it is just like, you make your own fun, mm-hmm. You know?
Oblivion.
But Oblivion,
it holds your hand.
It holds your hand. There's a main quest, and then there's the four or five major side quests. I mean, like, you've always got something that you're working towards, even if it's just being the Mac Daddy of whatever guild it is that you're in.
But if you're the fan of Oblivion around the table, uh-huh. Even you ran out of steam before you got very far through it, as far as technically through the story part.
Right. I mean, I nearly finished it. I mean, it's one of those things with a game that's like that kind of a time commitment. If you stop, it kind of lets go of you. But I mean, there were a lot of guys that have played it. Just from the feedback that I've got from saying that I stopped playing, a lot of people are like, yeah, I stopped, but I stopped at about 70. If I had more time away from work, I would probably have played a lot more, but I think I still would have stopped.
But I think those open-ended games are like, you know, an evolution and it's something that's new, because if you look at gaming 20 years ago, there was nothing like that. And like, you know, early on games like SimCity and stuff like SimCity. But you know, back in the day, you go to arcade, you knew that every game you played, you were going to die. Like, the end of the game is when you die. And like now, these new games aren't about that. Like Animal Crossing, you never die. It's, you know, it's about just like the experience and like communication and having these weird ideas. And yeah, I think it is like the future of gaming. But you know, old fashioned games aren't going anywhere. People still want those mm-hmm. experiences too.
So what's going to happen? Are you going to have both? I mean, I don't think you can bring both together especially well. I think when you try to blend both together, it becomes kind of a mess.
Well, no, just what GTA is.
GTA is, yeah.
And GTA is a hand-holding sandbox, the way that Oblivion is, and I think Fable 2 is going to be more like that. I mean, it was pretty in that direction anyway, but I think there's going to be more freedom in Fable 2. I think that won't be hard. I think there's going to the key is going to be that, you know, we want you to go from here to here, and when you get here, it's over. But the game isn't over. It's just the narrative is. Because in Oblivion, if you beat everything, if you're like the top dog in every guild and you've beaten the quest, you can still play. I mean, the way the characters interact with you changes, but the game still exists and you can still live in the world and do things in the world. It just becomes directionless.
That's the point where I'll be nauseous.
Right, but by that point, you've dropped 100 hours into it.
You'll be nauseous.
You know, probably $100. If you're Bethesda.
How would you be nauseous?
Troll.
Because Luke is the group out of this. Luke is the one out of this group who's the hardcore MMO player who does end level stuff at MMOs, right?
Right.
So how does that keep you attracted?
Well, the thing, like, of late,
How does it keep him attracted?
Well,
how does that keep that spell working?
One thing that I want to see out of MMOs more and more and more, and we're starting to, I mean, the old EQ used to do it, but like player-driven events need to happen more, and we're starting to see it emerge in games like EVE Online, which is a great game to talk about, but as far as actually playing it, it's not a whole lot of fun. It's a lot of like, oh god, I'm traveling again, I have 47 jumps to go pick up this cargo, and 47 jumps to go back. And it's like you're
sounds like a job.
It is. It is a lot like a job. But the thing that World of Warcraft has done was, like, we talked about it before, like the big gate opening event, which was a player-driven event ultimately. That would have happened regardless. But it still happens within the confines of a story for a server. And World of Warcraft, you're going to see that again sort of with this new 1.11 patch. But as far as, like, the scripting and open-ended gameplay, like, what keeps you going back? I've said it before. It's the people. And, like, that's why when I tried to play Oblivion, I think Oblivion was really frustrating because it was, like, my first RPG that in a while that didn't have the MMO part. Mm-hmm. And so I wasn't terribly, you know, I wasn't terribly into Oblivion, and I was kind of bored. And it was like people were like, you were bored. There's so much to do, and like, it didn't really push me out of the door. Like it did. Like I did the part where you get out into the world, and I started like walking across the world, and I was like, oh, it's a dog, I'll kill it.
See, I agree. I think Oblivion's so open ended, it kind of loses me. There's like so much to do, but I don't feel like I have to go do any of it. And it's like it's not balanced. Like there isn't like a tight, good experience you can have where it's all fun all the time.
And what open-ended game hasn't done that to
you? Well, but I think games can be more open-ended. Like Resident Evil 4, for example, has the semblance of a little bit of open-endedness. Like you're in like a physical place and you can and you can go back. You can travel where you want to an extent in Resident Evil 4, more so than previous Resident Evils, but yet it is still very scripted.
I was going to say, it's very linear. It's very scripted.
It's not an example on the open side. There's more freedom. There's elements of more freedom.
I think a lot of games do that, though, as far as giving you the illusion of freedom.
Like, it's not levels. There's no levels in Resident Evil 4.
But now but what we're talking about is more level design or map design than it is game philosophy. So there's like two sides of the coin then.
Right, but there are different ways to go. There are different paths you can take in that game. And I'm just saying, like, for me, I like the fusion of these things where, like, traditional scripted experiences become a little more open-ended, like, but without opening up so wide that it loses me.
Because that's what happens to me. And I mean, I'll say another example, the Need for Speed. Recently, the series has been like that. It's been wide open where, you know, you're out on the street screwing around, and that's cool. Except the problem is that before I reach the end of the storyline production, I've gotten bored with it. And I'm like driving around, okay, you know what? I've done this game. I'm tired of it. I'm bored with it. I never make it through to the end of it.
That's exactly how I feel about Grand Theft Auto, and I'm probably the minority
What's interesting is like...
No, I'm in the same boat.
Everyone kind of acts like Grand Theft Auto 3 invented the sandbox gameplay, but if you look at it, things like Super Mario 64 or The Legend of Zelda for NES are similarly sandboxy, and it isn't a new thing.
Absolutely. So great point.
The people forget about that.
Do we have some...
Well, yeah, so this is interesting because one of the reasons that brought me to this was because there's report on Business Week Online that this group called the DFC Intelligence is claiming that they're predicting worldwide online gaming market to grow from $3.4 billion right now to $13 billion in the next 6 years. I mean, that's a huge amount of money, so there's going to be tons of people playing online. And
is that based on some assumptions that all successful MMOs will be like Warcraft? Because that's not going to happen.
No, actually, part of what their assumption is that the next generation of consoles are more connected to the internet, and by virtue of being more connected to the internet, that'll spur developers to start thinking about developing for console-centric MMO play, which is an error, I know.
Oh, God, no.
But I also think that, as consoles go online, the online experiences are going to replace the offline experiences. I don't think it's just pure, like, you've got what you've got now, and then we've got all this online stuff, and that's just more. I think there's just going to be less, I think... You know, everything is going to be passively online anyway.
But I think as MMOs expand to other genres beyond RPG, like Halo 4 Runners or Burnout MMO, which we're hearing about now, like things like that will bring people into MMOs who haven't
previously.
It's rumored. Mm. I haven't seen it.
I've heard about it.
Yeah, I haven't seen it.
It's listed on EB. You can pre-order it.
Oh, okay.
See?
There you go.
As an MMO?
The other side.
So will that be EA and Bungie calling this week? Because it'd be good if they would call. I would like that.
So the other part about gaming in wide open spaces, if it's going to be MMO driven and it's going to be online, that means we're going to have all the retards. And I know that's one of your favorite subjects.
You love those retards.
Yeah.
You know,
people
like
play online are dicks.
Killer Ducky on our message board was like, why don't you talk about some of the best, worst people experiences you've encountered while gaming online? Well, I'll tell you why we don't talk about them, because they fucking suck, and we really don't want to remember number 7.
Interchangeable 13-year-olds yelling racist comments. It's like,
but you know what? A lot of them are even older. There's like, it's like people get on there and they act like, because you can't see their faces, suddenly they're this, you know, this unknown personality, so they can just act like whatever idiot they want to.
I wish we had a direct line to Microsoft where we could be like, yeah, I was playing Halo 2 last night. I played with, you know, this dude Alpha 27, he's a dick. And then, like, they're like, oh, great, banned. And then I would just never have to worry about him again. And, like, I will single-handedly volunteer to go out and clean up Xbox Live. Just, I'll go play. And you just,
there
you
are
give me
policing
the power.
Policies. You can give negative feedback. They do try.
Right, but that shit ain't working, is it?
I mean, there's...
Does anyone here think that...
I don't play with strangers.
No, I don't either.
My mom told me not to.
I just think that the douchebag denominator is so great that you're never going to run out of them.
Right, so if you don't play with strangers, then the community's not working.
I have enough friends.
I know you. I'm saying... right, we have enough friends and we can all get together and play and all right. that, but I'm saying in the broader sense of bringing...
If I wanted to explore that community, it does work. I mean, I'm sure there are good people out there and I could meet new gaming
And we were able to... You're able to easily find people that you do want to hang out with, you know? I mean, like... You're saying that community doesn't work because people that you don't know in real... You're not hooking up with people that you don't know in real life. But there are people that we know that we're not necessarily friends with, just acquaintances, that you can track down and hook up with. That's the key. Yeah. You want... I mean, I'm kind of like you. I want something at least a little bit familiar. So I'm not just... I hate it. Like, sometimes I play with my brother-in-law who lives in Chicago, and we'll go and play Halo or Perfect Dark or something. And there's nothing worse than me and him... Like, you know, we're drinking beer and chatting and playing a game. And then in Halo, there's two little fuckheads doing a split screen link into it. And they're just like, oh, he didn't know what he was doing. Oh, did you see what he did? Did you see what he did? Oh, I totally got it. And it's like just relentless. And you're just like, you know what? I'm just...
That's the reason why kids get beat up by the parents.
Did this happen to you when you were a child?
Some of them just fucking need an ass whooping. And when I hear that, it's like, could you get your dad for me on the real quick? Yeah, Mr. Alpha 27's dad beat the boy hard.
That's not what Microsoft tries to sell us with on Live. I mean, they talk about this great experience where you're going to be out there. They show all these pictures of people from all over the place, and you're getting together, and you're hanging out, and it's all cool.
Oh, and we're painting skateboards together.
Right.
Whatever.
And it's bullshit.
I have played an online game where it works. I remember, like, Phantasy Star Online. I was playing it on Dreamcast, you know, a decade ago, and I did, like, random play with random people and find cool people, and we had a good time, and it was, like...
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
Why did it work?
Because they were all really into the game, and I remember I was playing once with a guy from, like, England, a guy from Japan, and my friend, and we all, like, teamed up together and beat this boss, and it was like...
So, there's the assumption is that that everyone has a mature attitude towards it. And if by chance you stumble into something where everyone's a grown up, it's great. But more often than not, you don't. And I think it's time sensitive as well.
I used to play Rainbow Six 3 when that came out. That was the first game that I really got into on Live. And I played this every night with like the same 15 guys. And like the 16 of us would just play, go through maps and like split. And it was awesome. It was great. And it was like a great introduction to Live. And then it's sort of, since then, the overall quality of the experience is...
If they could age gate the community so that you would only play with, you know, over 21 or something, would you take advantage of that?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
That's kind of what I was trying to head towards. Would you do something like that? Because now Live's feedback system is fine, but it's not doing enough to get us out there and create the kind of community they want, which is Microsoft sells this whole idea of if you want to go play Forza or whatever, there'd be all these cool racing fans and you'd all hang out and you'd just go play some racing Forza or whatever. And it doesn't work like that at all.
Well, do you think that they're trying to offer an indication of what people are going after by like the thing that you can choose in your gamer score? Like, are you a professional?
Yes.
Is that working?
Well, the problem is most Xbox fans are into the same kinds of
games. Whatever the casual one is.
The recreational?
Yeah, recreational.
That's what I put, too.
But, like, you know, it's not a lot. Everybody who has Xbox 360 wants to play shooters mainly. It's not like there are, like, these hardcore, like, people who are into just, you know, Viva Pinata or something. There's not a lot of variety. Like, your average Xbox Live user is pretty similar, I find.
So, maybe on this whole question of, like, open-ended versus scripted, we'll have a chance to talk about it over the next couple of weeks as we work through our game off our pile of shame.
Which is what?
Are we doing that next?
I didn't see that. I don't know what it is yet. I'm scared.
I don't know what
I'm
it
scared.
Is yet. I have a feeling I know what it might be.
Well, so Skip and I have been talking about this, and we went through all the selections, and so since everyone hasn't played it, believe it or not, and it really fits the mold of what we're doing right, we're going to go with Psychonauts.
Cool.
I played the first level.
Well, so you have a leg up.
Yeah, I booted it up, but I never really...
So they need to send Luke Smith a copy.
I need to get a copy, too.
I do have to go ahead and say in advance that my name is in the credits of that game.
Really?
Yeah.
How did your name wind up in the credits of that game?
I ended up... A friend of mine is one of the programmers, and I helped her get her job. But I'm not biased or anything, so... I'm not biased.
He loves it already.
Wow.
So, yeah, I'm looking forward to
it. You know, it doesn't
that.
Come on the PlayStation.
It does actually come on the PlayStation.
Oh, God.
Garnett, Blu-ray. Are you, the sequel. Garnett, are you ever right? just a question.
He's just impulsive sometimes.
Just impulsive.
Yeah.
I think you need some Centrum Silver.
Let's take some Pepsi.
Yeah, help you out.
Shit.
Should I have to replace my Geritol?
You're sounding more and more like Macho Man Randy Savage as the show goes on.
I think snap into a Slim Jim. Because I'm running out of the tea here. All right. So that's what we're going to be playing. If you guys want to play along with us, go out and grab a copy of Psychonauts.
So how are we going to do this? We're going to play. Are we doing? Are we just going to talk about it next week? We're going to play.
We're going to talk about it over the next couple of 3 weeks, however long it takes us to get through it. And right. We'll just kind of share, like, at the end of the show or the beginning of the show. We'll
Does
do
anyone
like,
know if it runs on the 360?
I think it does.
Okay.
Oh, that would be golden.
Yeah, if it doesn't, I'm going to complain. Lots. If you can imagine.
You? No.
Never. I can't
imagine.
It
would be awesome
that.
If when we come to talk about it, we could get Tim Schafer to come in and talk about it with us.
Let's try and do that.
That would be sweet.
He's just down the street. Let's
yeah,
do it.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
All right. There's something to look forward to, and something else to look forward to is news. We'll be back in a couple of breaks with a couple of seconds, whatever, after this break with news and Luke.
Listen to EGM Live to hear Electronic Gaming Monthly editors take you beyond the pages of the magazine.
Extended impressions of the hottest games.
Shocking celebrity guest stars.
Exterminate all man animals at will!
And the newest video game soundtracks.
That's EGM Live, available at egmlive.oneup.com or the iTunes Music Store.
Want to know what's new now? Then join Jim Lauterbach and Patrick Norton as they tackle the latest technology news. They'll keep you informed with their weekly What's New Now podcast. Just go to whatsnewnow.com and subscribe, or subscribe through iTunes.
You're listening to the 1UP Yours podcast on the 1UP Radio Network. And we're back, and from the four corners of the world, it's Luke Smith with 1UP News.
The four corners of the world? We let him out of the building?
He can do whatever the hell he wants to. He's not an employee anymore.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
After you fired him?
Yeah. So the first thing I want to talk about this week is they patched Oblivion, which we wrote about a couple weeks ago, and that like it would be nice if they would patch Oblivion, and they patched it to improve the frame rate and sort of borked it. And you were saying earlier in the show that it was borked.
Different people are reporting different things. What I found happened was because I downloaded the new live update and the patch in the same night. And for me, the frame rate was better, but there was some... Because everyone's talking about these graphical changes, but there's no... I've not seen the official list. Like, some people are saying, oh, the textures are better. And I'm not sure if I'm buying that. But what I did notice is that some of the lighting seemed different. Like, they maybe changed the levels. Because, like, my guy has one of the big green glass swords. And it used to sort of glint and, like, look very transparent. And now it looks kind of flat and dull. And I'm not really sure if that's just a problem that the patch started or... But then the other problem I had is that as soon as I put the patch in, the loads just got terrible. Like, it was like... In fact, it would choke on loads frequently. In fact, I mean, the whole thing just, like, ground to a halt several times.
Wow.
Post-patch.
Game-breaking freezes.
I've been told, yeah, I mean, like, it would nearly fill up the load bar and then just, like, keep chugging.
Wow. I wonder how that game's going to turn out when they finish it.
But I've heard that might be...
I don't think you'll ever know. They never do finish them.
There's, like, you can clear the, you know...
The cash.
Clear the cash. I've heard that might fix that problem.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I read on NeoGAF that there's a way to... that people were saying, like, you enter, like, a button combination and it'll clear the cash.
Well,
and
you just turn it on and hold down A, right?
Well, this is a new, like, elaborate Contra Code-esque clearing of the cash.
It's just like a...
Yeah, and I sent the thing...
Even more clear.
even clearer.
A clearer cash.
The Ajax way.
I sent it to Microsoft yesterday, and I was like, engineering, what's up? What's this do? And they haven't got back to me yet because I want to write about it, but I don't want to, like, kids, don't do this because it gives you a message.
The frame
like,
rate is... oh, sorry. I mean, on Oblivion, the one thing that they did fix, though, is that the frame rate is much better.
It's kind of a mess, though, for one of the best-selling games on a console to be, like, janky. You're putting in codes and downloading patches to fix it, and I don't know about that.
I had a problem in one of the towns in Anvil. And, like, different people had different problems with Oblivion, and no one could work out why there wasn't consistency to it. But if you went to Anvil previously... When I went there, the entire town looked like it was 10 feet off the ground.
Which it's meant, levitation, Holmes.
So, yeah, the whole thing. And there was none of the buildings had any ground in them when you were walking around. So, and it was the town that was surrounded by water. So all of the NPCs would fall into the water as they were wandering around, and so would you, and you couldn't get back out. But you could still interact with them like they were walking around. So these guys would swim up to you and go, "Good day to you, sir." And it was just really fucking bizarre. But it did fix that.
So is this acceptable to you as like a fun aside?
Well,
this is quirky. I love it. No, this is not acceptable.
No, but I mean, I didn't even find it until
you went back to playing Oblivion because of this. You're like, oh, well, this is different.
One of the things that I was curious about was if one of the major
mighty curious. This is
weird,
fun.
It did fix that problem for me.
That,
and created
more.
That right there is why guys like Party Boy on our message boards are asking if next gen is just a bad joke.
Well, you know,
I mean, he even goes through like all this stuff, and
come on, that's like saying he's PC gaming a bad joke.
Hey, I'm just saying
there are some kinks to be ironed out.
It's not next gen. It's like these games are so fucking big now when they develop them it's purely business practices that forces these things. It's not that they, you know, they were just like, oh, fuck it. I mean, the developers just tear themselves up about being forced to release stuff that they know is good. You'd think that developers don't know there's a problem with a game.
Defending, but Bethesda does not have a good track record of shipping like complete functional.
But no,
a good track record. They don't even have a bad track record.
You're talking about the business requirements. I'm talking about the talent, the guys that sit there and spent 4 years on this thing, and it got to a point where 2K or whoever it was says, "We've got to put this thing out now." And these guys would go, "No, we haven't finished it yet." We know what it's like. We develop products. 1UP, Game Videos, Gazerk. Gazerk's not finished. Game Videos, it's still in beta. We do it. And it pains me to put these things out when they're not finished. But there comes a point where the business requirement outweighs the art, because at some point you've got to make some money. And the people that get abused by people like us are the producers and the artists and the programmers. Because we say, oh, next gen's fucked because the games aren't finished. And like, it's not their fault.
So you heard it here. 1UP, the Oblivion of video games. patch coming next
no
week.
No website is finished. GameSpot's not finished. IGN isn't finished. They're all constantly in development.
But when we do get AAA games that have no problems whatsoever, is that like a magic anomaly? And we're like, we should expect games to be broken because they have to be out by the end of fiscal year?
No, we shouldn't expect it.
I don't accept these apologies. Nope, not acceptable. Don't accept it.
But right now, the business requirements of the games industry and the requirements of putting a game together are out of sync, because Oblivion was unusual that it took 4 years to get it there, and it's still not done. And Halo 3's been in development for, 2 years already? And some developers have the luxury, like id and the guys at Epic, they can say, it's not going out until it's done. But not many developers have that luxury. They have other things hanging over them. And at the end of the day, the games industry is a business. And at some point, whoever's providing the money is saying, we can't afford to cancel it. You've got to get it into a state where we can release it.
You know what you're doing? You're making Gabe Newell's argument for episodic gaming, because that's exactly his argument. His argument goes that it took them 5 years to put together Half-Life 2, and at the rate they were expanding, you know, like it took them X number of years to put together Half-Life, and then the expansions, and then Half-Life 2 took this much longer. He's like, at this rate, we'll be retired before we put out Half-Life 3, so we'll just go to episodic and give you guys a chunk every so often.
If that gets Shane, what he was just talking about, it's probably the best thing.
Let me give you another example. Like, EA is an encouraging move. When they lost billions of dollars probably by pushing Superman back, it's missing the movie window. It's coming out with a DVD now. That's huge, because the game wasn't ready. It wasn't good. And instead of shipping like a crappy broken game to cash in, and they decided, hey, let's actually make
that's EA. They have $1 billion quarters.
Wait a minute, I thought EA held features out for year after year.
They do.
Oh, okay. So
EA can afford to do that, and the Quake guys can afford to do that. But there's a lot of publishers and a lot of developers. Like a lot of people, I mean, like Tim Schafer. I mean, if we get him in here, let's get him to talk about it. You think he didn't get shit? I mean, he ended up publishing through Majesco.
Who? Okay, so, Jesus, I didn't expect this to talk. Friggin', that was a lot. That was a lot of information coupled with news. The next thing I want to talk about is Ken Kutaragi, who I love.
Oh, God, we have to.
My lord and savior.
He's a weekly supply of what the fuck.
He's lost it.
And this week's is the PlayStation 3 is more than a game console.
Oh, it is.
It is a PC.
He never said it was going to be a game console.
Speaking about the PS3.
And it's not going to.
Yeah, here we go. Yeah, that's you need games to achieve that. Speaking about the PS3, we never said we will release a game console, he said. It is radically different from PlayStation It is clearly a computer. With a game console, you need to take out any unnecessary elements inside the console in order to decrease its cost. This will, of course, apply to the PS3 as well.
He's nuts. He goes on to talk about how he envisions it being built to order with like a million different pieces and everybody can build their own.
Like a sandwich from McDonald's.
Shut up, Ken. This is not what you need to be doing.
Well, I mean, you jumped on Sony this week on your blog at egmshane.oneup.com.
I talk about how they're destined to lose market share and like this isn't helping. Like no matter what, they're going to lose market share just because 360 and Wii are like strong competitors. And unlike last generation, you know, they actually have some strong competition this time. But when talking about how PS3 is a computer and how it doesn't need games...
Well, they've been banging that drum since day one, haven't they? It's like, it's not the PlayStation or the PlayStation game card. It's the PlayStation 2 computer entertainment system. And they say, not only do they put it in their press releases and their website, they say it out loud. It's like there's a rule at Sony where they have to say computer entertainment system for everything.
What was the stink, you might remember, in the UK about taxation on the PlayStation 2 as to whether it was...
Oh, there was something to do with what it was capable of processing or something. So it had to be declared a computer, not a entertainment device or something.
Launches missiles.
So yeah,
not available in Lebanon. For nuclear purposes.
I mean, I understand it has all this functionality and it's cool that they're like pimping that functionality, but you don't want to lose focus and this is still a game system and it's supposed to be fun.
What do you mean you don't want to lose focus? They already lost focus. They lost focus a while ago, man.
Well, they're shifting focus.
Wasn't there a lot of back and forth like recently as well on the controller? Didn't they respond to
the immersion
tech
stuff?
Thing.
Yeah, no. Because like Microsoft last week was like throwing some pot shots.
Microsoft was talking about how like they did the whole motion thing with their
sidewinder.
Giant sidewinder.
I have one of those in a cupboard back home.
Whoa.
When I worked on PC
Zone.
How
it didn't work with most games.
Yeah, we just didn't find it to be particularly functional.
It was horrible. Like, they had all kinds of crap back then. I have a joypad that they created where it's kind of like the Negcon.
I had one of these things.
So it's a joypad that just feels like it's collapsing when you're playing with it.
They called it the first-person shooter controller. You remember
that?
That's
right, because it has
the handle,
sort of like, yeah.
Ooh. And you like moved it to like point around, like almost like the Wii thing.
Back then, they had some great sticks for the PC. They had a flight, like a flight stick that you could twist as well that worked really well.
Feedback
yeah.
Stuff,
yeah.
They did have good sticks.
Good stuff.
But so I mean, yes, Microsoft have done, but Sony, I think, were being sort of very polite about the whole sort of, bitch slapping they were getting.
Well, they kind of at this point just have to bend over and take it for a little while because everything they say, every time they open their mouths, every time it's like Phil Harrison.
They need to tell
Ken,
Phil to
like,
put a sock in it.
He stands up and bends over and grabs his ankles and is like, do your worst. And that's what's happening. Like, I don't know how Sony can get away with some of this stuff. Like, are you kidding? Like, I just heard that come out of your mouth. Really? God.
I'm a little confused by the PR strategy.
Like, I went back, I was going through Skip's Flickr this week, and I went back and found my favorite picture in life. It's of me after the Sony conference on the back of the bus, smiling. It's the sweet grin of victory.
I was there.
Yeah, I know you were. But it's like, and I keep reading this stuff, and I'm like, I can't believe this. Like, I just...
Yeah, they need to fix their spin.
They need to write the write that PR ship because
I think the problem is they don't really have any spin. They're letting the executives sort of just run their mouths off on whatever the internal
not the best way.
They're swimming in it the same way they were swimming in it developing the console. They're on the last minute just trying to rush through everything. That's the same reason a freaking Sony console has an NVIDIA PC graphics chip in it and not a custom-designed graphics
processor.
They're
consistent
processor.
With their lunacy, though. I mean, like this, it's a computer thing. I mean, Phil Harrison has said that before.
That's true. I mean, they've been saying crazy like 4D time plus space bullshit for like 10 years. I mean, like, remember PS2 was like supposed to be the Matrix or something. You know, like, this isn't new.
Remember they had this PS9?
They were telling us, you know, I mean, there was all the stuff about, you know, the Iraqis buying lots of them or whatever. Yeah. But there was it's a computer, it does, you know, let's not forget that all of these things at their heart
They have the patent on living in the internet, too.
But, okay, so
they do.
So it was a computer then, but they weren't charging you like it was a computer.
And
they're
not marketing it like it's a computer.
Yeah, but...
It should be... Like the problem with the PSP.
We haven't seen how they're marketing the PS3.
No, but, well, we've already seen some intent that they want it to be. It's like with the PSP. It's like, make your mind up, what is it? Is it a movie player? Is it a music player?
Everything.
Is it a games machine?
Everything done meh.
You can't convince anyone that something is good at something if you're telling them it does everything.
Absolutely.
So that's Sony. We hit Microsoft a minute ago. Let's be fair and talk about Nintendo. Iwata talked in Japan this week about the virtual console pricing. He sort of mentioned... price range that stuff would cost for the VC in yen, and it converts to like in between $5 and $10 essentially for games. It's like $4.50 and $4.50 to $8.99. That's okay. I'd pay $4.50 for buying a commando. Yeah, per game.
I think it's reasonable when like most of Xbox Live Arcade games are terrible and $4, and the good ones like Lumines are $15. You know, like
rumored.
That's real. That's a real. Slide.
I think that's pretty
real. Yeah, but I think Nintendo. I think that press conference was interesting because he also said that they don't expect to lose any money on Wii, whereas Sony has gone on the record of saying they intend to lose $885 million launching the PS3.
That's what that extra $50 that you're going to pay for it to be $249.99 is going to be. That's the profit margin.
We've loved about it, and I don't want GT Gowen to think we're not going to come back to this. We're not going to catch it today, but at some point we ought to get into that because this is obviously an interesting topic. What do we want to see on Xbox Live Arcade? What would be good games to be out there?
Yeah, I kind of got into that thread because Luke have had this theory for a while that all the Dreamcast games will eventually work their way onto Live Arcade.
So next week we'll come back. We're running out of time. We don't want to go too long today, so we will definitely come back to that next week because it's interesting stuff.
The other thing about Nintendo is they landed this messaging patent, which is essentially like it mirrors the patent that Microsoft has on Xbox Live in a lot of ways, where the ability to message in games and sort of like a messaging client. And the thing to keep in mind is they filed for this before the GameCube came out. So they've been like waiting to get their patent approved for a long ass time. And that doesn't necessarily mean that that's something that we're going to see in the Wii. We should see some sort of inter-user communication, hopefully their online service, hopefully. We don't know anything.
Maybe they'll unify things with DS and stuff as well. So you have an ID for the machine.
They talked about that too. They talked about Opera Browser on Wii and how that'll work. And yeah,
cool.
One of the last things to talk about today is sort of the slap to the wrist that Rockstar got over hot coffee. The FTC was talking about this for like months and months and months and months. And future infractions will result in like an $11,000 violation. I guess my question is like, really, who still cares?
$11,000?
Yeah. Wow. Huh.
On a game that made what?
Billions.
Yeah. Good. Yeah, see, so like, exactly. Like,
so
no
it's
one cares.
A token gesture, basically. Yeah. So we went through all that. And this is the.
Jack Thompson got lots of free PR.
The last thing.
Yay.
Yeah. The last thing is the thing that I walked over to Skip and Garnett's offices this week and, like, was stamping around like Rumpelstiltskin. I was so pissed. And I guess my opinion on it shifted from the initial reaction, but like EA announced that Battle for Middle-earth 2 has like this weird marketplace clause where they're releasing three maps that you get for free for Battlefield, this Lord of the Rings game, right?
Yeah.
You get them for free if you pre-order at like EB Games, GameSpot, or Game Crazy, GameStop, or EA.com. You get them for free. If you don't pre-order, you have to pay like the equivalent of $8.50 in marketplace points. And yikes. I was like, what? Are you kidding? Why do kids have to pay $9 for three maps? Like, I was really upset about it. But then, like, you're getting it free if you pre-order. So that led to Garnet and I talking about the validity of pre-ordering. Because I hate pre-ordering. I hate game stores. I hate a lot of the people who work there. I hate hearing about how the Wii works I've played it. Like, and you have it, and you're like, yeah, you just do this. Like, no, that's what the EGM image said. That's over on your magazine rack. That's not how you play it. And that was just for show. Oh, how do you know that?
They did talk about that on their podcast, actually, that photo.
Yeah, I listened. I was there in spirit. So I stamped around a lot, and you sort of, Garnet showed the light of how pre-ordering is
bad. No. I don't want to say that. Don't paint me into that corner, because I'm definitely not a big fan of the way game retail works.
Right, but you're not a fan of the way it works.
Not having been in it. As a matter of fact, I pretty much abhor it.
But pre-ordering
it does serve a purpose for publishers.
Yeah. That's the point of it. Yeah,
but I don't like them selling like crippled games. Like I don't mind a free T-shirt, but like if I don't buy it from that retailer, I get a version that doesn't have as much content.
No, you get it. You just have to pay $8.50 for it.
Wrap up the rest of the thought. What's the benefit for publishers?
The benefit for publishers is that when you pre-order, you're sort of giving you're participating in essentially a survey of how many copies of the game to make. To extend this in all kinds of directions, when you're at a game store and you see a bin of the same game being sold, that's overstock and that's stuff that they overordered and the publisher's losing money on. When publishers lose money, it leads to increased prices for the consumer. So in this weird roundabout way, you can rationalize pre-ordering, like pre-ordering titles that you care about, at least as a way to inform publishers to ship appropriate amounts of the game, which will cut their overhead, and ultimately someday in a fictional universe, the savings may be passed on to you. So
$9 apparently.
Yeah, nah, yep.
That part I wouldn't hold my breath about, but the part that really does pay off is when you go into the store and say you wanted some Capcom title, because Capcom titles are notorious for being like in this niche. It's like they're very popular with hardcore gamers.
I think a good example would be like Guitar Hero Last Fall.
Holy crap.
Nobody knew what it
example.
Was, and it's an expensive high-ticket item that stores right. don't want to invest in because it's like $60, $70. They might only get 4 copies because it's a risk, whereas if 10
Halo,
people pre-order it, they might get like
20. Halo 2, when that came out, it was, if you hadn't pre-ordered it, it was difficult to get. If you wanted it the day it came
no,
out.
I
pre-ordered it and
I
got the 10.
I pre-ordered it and canceled
well,
it because I ended up
happened,
finding mine at
Mario. Like new Super Mario was very difficult to get the first day.
Yeah, I so couldn't get it for the first week.
I mean, it's positioned as providing a service. But I don't like this idea, this sort of implied discount thing, where it's like if you pre-order it, you're getting money off the overall experience or something. I mean, but the communication of it is a bit sort of gimmicky.
I don't know. I think the maps are a hell of a lot better than the t-shirts. Screw the t-shirt thing. I mean, I like
right.
this.
You pre-order it, would give you more of the game.
But you could still go buy this part. The part is what they're doing is they're incentivizing me to go participate in their survey, because you're right. You know, that's a good way to put it. It's basically a survey for them to figure out how much to make of the game.
It's like bundling the game with an expansion pack if you pre-order. Really? Yeah.
Sort of.
It is
you still have
way.
To download. They're not
yes.
giving you the content on the disc. You just get credit, presumably. Does it say?
I would guess they have some kind of code system worked out, I would bet.
Right, so you punch in the code. They give you like a redemption thing that
yeah,
you can punch into life.
Yeah, with a pre-order, you will receive a promotional coupon that makes it a free download. So you'll still be sort of accessing an interface.
I've never seen them tie marketplace stuff to specific downloads, or I wonder if they just
well,
give you
a... Well, that's something that
they're
doing this will tie in nicely. That's something that they're doing with EA, and it may be, if Microsoft is smart, that little Xbox Live update that they released, maybe they'll tie that in on disc because they're going to release it in new games to maybe the NCAA football game that's going to come out and sell mm-hmm. a little bit. Like, that would be a good way to get it to users during the summer instead of the users who don't have high-speed internet getting their Xbox Live updated, which has a lot of functionality offline. Getting that updated in the fall when the disc is likely, when like there's the Zerg of Microsoft Game Studios titles, and by then there'll be a new update, and it's like, oh, great, months behind.
If there was a new Capcom game, a new fighting game coming, would you be more interested in pre-ordering if they offered you Street Fighter 2 on Live Arcade?
Oh, of course.
So, I mean, would you have a complaint with that?
No, I think a lot of it is going to come out of the way they position it and communicate it. Because the way it came, when the news came out, it sounded like, you know, the game, it's been basically saying...
I had a hissy fit.
Pre-order it and the game's $10 off.
Yeah.
Right.
Basically.
Which is
and
bullshit.
And it's a $60 game, which we're saying is a $70 yeah. game.
But
really?
I think you would disagree if, say, there was a game that came out and, like, the version at EB had extra content and that version, that content was not available anywhere else. I think
they do
that would make a huge difference.
But they do that, too.
I've seen that.
Like, there's
yeah.
different... There's
are
different
the maps going to be available day one? Because that's another annoying thing, is that why release a game and release add-ons for it at the same time? Shouldn't they just be on the disc? I mean, this is kind of what we got
think.
To with Oblivion.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I'm fine with giving people an experience, letting them play it for a few months, and when a bunch of people have kind of exhausted it of possibility, saying, hey, look, we did some more stuff. But, like, the day it comes
they're
out...
They're basically raising the price of the game $8, because
yeah.
this is content that could have been in the game, and then it said, like, oh, hold that back, and let's charge them extra.
Or give it to people who pre-order.
Or give it to people who pre-order.
So if you wanted the game... they're trying basically to force your hand. If you want yeah. the game, go pre-order it.
So that seems to transition well into like a potential idea for question of the week, which would be asking you guys, do you pre-order? And if you don't, is there a way to incentivize you pre-ordering?
Can we limit this just to games?
Yeah, two games.
Right. Not to hardware, because we know you're going to have to
yeah,
pre-order
hardware
if you want to
no,
buy some hardware.
Only games. So do you pre-order? And if you don't, like I don't, because I hate the whole experience of it, is there a way to incentivize getting you to pre-order? Is that fair?
Perfect.
All right.
Nailed it. And the other thing you'll be doing for us this week is contest item number 3, which Skip came up for us, is the opportunity to draw. I'm really nervous about that. Or even worse, Photoshop. Lord,
oh,
you really invited this one.
That's cool.
Thank
but
God
we
have
know
music.
That any pictures of Shane, he's going to be immense.
Immense, yes. His immense whiteness.
Paleness.
Paleness.
I'm not that pale. I'm white.
We don't really want to know. All right. So anyway, there you go. That's your contest item. Details are at boards.oneup.com. And we do appreciate all the review submissions. And if you are listening, we'd love to have you go by iTunes or wherever and give us a good review. The listener numbers we've been getting are fantastic. We really appreciate you guys listening. The more listeners we get, the easier it'll be to get guys in here from developers and publishers to talk to us about games. So tell a friend, have them come listen to us, get on the boards, and we'll talk to you next week.
This has been 1UP Yours, a production of the Ziff Davis Game Group and part of the 1UP Radio Network. 1UP Yours is hosted by Garnet Lee and John Davison, produced by Andrew Fister and Mike King, and is published every Friday afternoon at podcasts.1UP.com and at the iTunes Music Store.
What's up? I'm not in the fucking credits.